The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is the Greg Brady Show on the Fan 590.
Good afternoon. Hi. Yes. Right. It's the Greg Brady Show for a Tuesday, November the 9th. Hope everyone's doing well. So much to get to. Pat Henkin, as Barb mentioned, on the show coming up in just a little bit. We raved about his television performance in the booth. And an interesting angle, and certainly a local one at that, on Sunday night ESPN television. We're going to get to that in a little bit. And also ESPN maybe getting hockey back. Some really groundbreaking, interesting stuff from The Source in this case. Not The Source magazine. That's like hip-hop. What would they have to do with television rights for hockey? Maybe there's something there, but not that I can think of in the next 2 hours. But I want to start with the Raptors today. Oh, and somebody also overpays for a Japanese baseball player that won't be any good. So that's similar to, or it won't be as good as they think he is. And this was the Oakland A's in this particular case. Okay, NBA. Raptors lose last night. I heard a bunch of people describe this as, oh, bad loss. Golden State's pretty good. I don't think it's a bad loss. And it gets me thinking, what is a bad loss for the Toronto Raptors? You would think that when 1-6 Charlotte rolls in Wednesday. And think about this as well. Start of the week, Raptors hadn't been home in a while. I heard estimates ranging from about 10,500 to top end 13,000 for Golden State. I know it's an out-of-conference team, but still an exciting team. And the Bobcats do not play tonight, so they'll be 1-6 playing a 1-6 Toronto Raptors team on Wednesday night. The Leafs are playing on television, and you tell me how many people are going to be there. Last year, it should be pointed out, Golden State wasn't a very good team. They look like a much better team this year. They're already off the hop at 5-2. They only won 26 games last year. But they're building through the draft. They've got some collegiate players they like a lot. American-born collegiate players that they like a lot. And they're building with them. Golden State doesn't look like a veritable United Nations of the NBA, which can work, but right now it's not expected to. I know there are people who are diehard Raptors fans that are already incensed. And, you know, I've read a couple of people who write, who kind of carry the water for the Raptors on a regular basis in the print media, who say, oh, they were flat last night. Well, I think they got beat by a better team. Call me a layman. Call me crazy. They got beat by a better team. So they go from playing a non-playoff team that won 26 games last year that looks real good, Golden State looks. Doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs in the West. It still might take 50 wins. Last year in the West, Oklahoma City just made it at 50 wins. Well, they didn't just make it, but they were the 8th seed in. Houston at 142. Now they're going to play a terrible Bobcats team that was a 7th seed that ended up losing to Orlando. That looks nothing like it this year. I was talking to a couple friends of mine, two different friends in two different NBA cities, one in Detroit, one in Cleveland. And I said, this season, you could end up with four teams, maybe five teams, who are going to win 25 games or less. Almost unprecedented. I always kept hearing, well, the East is coming back in the NBA. The East. LeBron James is still in the East. Dwight Howard's team's still in the East. The Celtics are still in the East. They've gone to the NBA Finals two of the last three seasons, but I don't see it. I think this is a weak conference, and Toronto may end up being the weakest of the weak. Here's the question. What's a bad loss for the Raptors? Because last night wasn't it. What's a bad season for the Raptors? I hear people say, oh, they're off to a bad start. Isn't this the start you expected? And if we say that, is there any pressure whatsoever? There was a debate going back and forth. Is Toronto, for all coaches and general managers, a hard market to play in? And I'd argue it isn't. And I've heard Raptors fans say enough times, and I realize there have been incompetent GMs, thank you, Bruce Arthur, who've stayed in their job far longer than they otherwise should have. But there was a reason. They're either an ex-player great, they delivered a title, they delivered an NBA Finals like Billy King did in Philadelphia, and we can debate delivered. Oh, how much was Billy King a part of it? Iverson carried them. He was MVP in 2001. I gotcha. But there's a reason you build up tenure and you get rope in a certain city. Take the Knicks and Jimmy Dolan out of the equation with Isaiah. It defies logic, gravity, sexual harassment lawsuits. It defies everything. I'm not asking how much of a rope the Raptors have. I think it'd be silly to make a change midseason for either Jay Triano or Brian Colangelo. And again, we get into Buffalo Bills territory when we say that, because what's the point of going 30-52 if you can go 15-67 and pick first? And again, please pick a collegiate player from the NCAA first overall. 33 of the last 35 draft picks in the top five in the last 7 years since the Darko year have been NCAA collegiate players. Wow, but this guy is in Spain and he's beautiful and he moves through traffic and he cuts to the lane. Ever played in the ACCs? Ever played, you know, against a road crowd at North Carolina? Ever played on Tobacco Road? Ever been on a Big Ten road trip? Oh, really? Okay. To be the best, you got to play the best. There might be exceptions to the rule, and I'm a big fan. If you're drafting 19th, you're a pretty good team. Go ahead. Take a chance. If you're the Detroit Pistons, and it still was stupid to take Darko Milicic, but somebody else would have been stupid if they hadn't been. You come back with, you don't have Rasheed Wallace yet, but you're building a core. You're going to draft Tayshaun. You got Tayshaun Prince, Richard Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, Ben Wallace. Soon to be Antonio McDyess and Rasheed Wallace. Pretty good core. Take Darko. Carmelo? Oh, no. We don't need Carmelo Anthony. When in reality, it was a swing and a miss. And how about Ricky Rubio? Do you want me to get started on Ricky Rubio? Europeans don't work in the top five. Take your chances. Sign them as free agents. Scout all you want. They don't work. Don't do it again next year. Whoever is making that pick for the Raptors. Our number, 416-870-0590, star 590. Throwing a couple things out there. What's a bad season? What's a bad loss anymore? I mean, it's a competitive team. I often hear this. I mean, look at Wade Phillips with Dallas and the Cowboys. If you can get close enough to lose by 3 points, 6 points, 7 points every week, some of this comes down to coaching. The Bills have lost three games in the last 3 weeks by a total of 9 points, okay? They're not getting blown off the field talent-wise. So where are the intangibles? Who's a winner? Who isn't? Who's been there before? Who hasn't? Who's a good coach and who isn't? I don't know how to evaluate Jay Triano. I really don't. But I know this. If you're hanging around in games, you better win some of them. You have to win some of them. And though I support fully Jay Triano staying for this entire season and showing what he can do, I think we can concur this was the only, based on his experience before he really got deep into USA basketball, again, huge Triano fan, this was probably the only NBA head coaching job that he would have gotten. Whether it's because he's Canadian, whether it's because you know him here, and it's easier, he's a superb guy, then it's easier to tolerate when the team wins 20 games and loses 62 this year. Either or, it's the only NBA job he probably would have got. And they lost to a good team last night. That's not a bad loss. They didn't come out flat. Golden State's going to beat some teams on the road this year. And I mentioned on Twitter last night, Greg Brady 71. I mentioned last night, I think the Raptors against whoever makes the playoffs in the Western Conference, Toronto will be real fortunate to win two games. Two. Okay, they've already lost one to Portland, one to the Lakers, one to Golden State. Don't think I'm missing anybody. And they've obviously lost to a potential a non-playoff team in Sacktown. 416-870-0590. It's 888-666-0590 if you're listening on Sirius satellite radio, Star 590. Dan Shulman seems to have the Sunday night television job. And John Miller is out. I'm mixed on this. I love both guys. We'll talk about that coming up in a bit, but we want to stay with the Raptors. What's a bad loss, and what's disappointing for you if you're a Raptors fan, depending on what they do this year? I just feel like it's a laissez-faire, hey, whatever happens, happens, in front of 9,000, 10,000, however many thousand people. Steve, you're on the Fan 590.
Hi there. I think the problem is deeper than than this topic. The Raptors have had expansion draft picks. They've not want to stay in Toronto. They've had multiple number one draft picks. They've not stayed in Toronto. I almost compare this to like the Phoenix Coyotes of the NHL. I just can't see them going anywhere anytime soon. You know, we come up with all these excuses. We've had the Lenny Wilkins. We've had the Isaiah Thomases. Mm-hmm. We've had multiple number one draft picks. I can't see any number one draft pick staying in Toronto and wanting to stay here. If I was a basketball player growing up in the U.S., I'd want to play for a losing Knicks team before a winning Toronto team.
But why do American players want to play for Canadian hockey teams? They seem to.
I think that's changed. I don't think that's necessarily true. I look at it like a hockey player from out west is going to want to play for Calgary before he's going to want to play for Toronto or for the Dallas Stars. I just don't see Canadian basketball really growing here. And I think the Raptors are in a whole heap lot of trouble today, tomorrow, down the road. And in my lifetime, I don't even see them winning one championship final.
All right, let me give you this. Winning is different than staying. And I think there's enough scenarios where we misjudge successes of franchises. I heard somebody say a year ago, right, 15th anniversary. The 15 years on the floor, they've been a successful team. Stop it. Stop it right now. One playoff series win. I don't care about the circumstances. I don't care what color the money is that people use at the concessions. One playoff series win and 8 or 9 under 500 seasons? That's not a success. They haven't been a successful team. No one can argue otherwise. It's simply there's things you can debate and things that are fact. It's not been successful on the floor. There have been some great players here, but I'm not a believer that the market limits them. If Chris Bosch is playing here with two other all-stars, if he looks and sees, again, they weren't going to draft Brandon Roy instead of Bargnani, but if he looks and sees he's got a front court with LaMarcus Aldridge, okay, a collegiate player who played at the highest level, who it was worth spending, again, 33 of the last 35 picks in the top five have been a collegiate player, or a high school player, I should say. An American-born player who played against the best competition for his age. And there's going to be Kevin Garnett's and Kobe Bryant's. Again, I must be a heck of a racist because I wouldn't draft a European and I wouldn't draft a white power forward or big man. Ask Vancouver how Bryant Reeves worked out. And yes, it's a stereotype. You know why we have stereotypes sometimes? They're accurate. In basketball with, you know, big, slow white guys there. White man can't jump. Didn't you see the movie? 416-870-0590, star 590. Want to hear from Raptors fans or even casual observers. When you look at this team, what do you see and what's a bad loss anymore? Expectations are at rock bottom. So what's disappointing? How could last night's loss be disappointing? Talents on the Golden State side of things.
Now more of the Greg Brady Show on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590.
.122. Welcome back to the Greg Brady Show on Sirius Satellite Radio 97, and of course the Fan 590 right here in Toronto. Blue and white tonight with Gord Stellick. Leafs Lightning, first of four meetings between the clubs. We're talking about the Toronto Raptors. Tomorrow night they'll host the Charlotte Bobcats, and again, this is not a moratorium. I don't want to, you know, I think you can oversimplify a radio topic sometimes. I'm not asking you about Colangelo, stay or go. I'm not asking you about Triano, stay or go. You're in the middle of the season now. You didn't make a change in the offseason, so move forward with these guys. You look disorganized. Look at the mess Jerry Jones was yesterday. And I said it on this show at the start of it. I said, Jerry Jones has already fired Wade Phillips by saying, he's my coach until the end of the season. And I raised the analogy, you'd never say that about your girlfriend. You'd never say that about your pet. That's a nice dog you got there. Oh, yeah, he's my dog till the end of 2010. Well, then what are you going to do with him? That dog was Wade Phillips, and they finally put him out of his misery yesterday. But the Cowboys looked disorganized. And now, I mean, they have before, right? Barry Switzer, they look disorganized at different times under the Jerry Jones regime. But a couple people are asking, you know, clarify the 33 out of 35 comment. Since Darko Milicic went second overall in the LeBron, Bosh, Wade draft, so you've had seven drafts times five. I'm going top five. 33 of 35 players have been collegiate or high school American-born players. And that's generally the safer bet. You can experiment with a Manu Ginobili late in a round. Okay, Pau Gasol went three. Fine. Okay. Good player. Good player, got great when he went to the Lakers. Don't give me people around him. Hit the weight room, got tough, played in big games, was better coached. I mean, better coached by a country mile, right? Once he got to play for Phil Jackson. And then the legendary Ricky Rubio, okay, who just didn't know what he wanted, who was being pressured by the Spanish media, his national teammates, to stay in Spain. After saying, I'm coming, oh yeah, you want to draft me, go right ahead. I'll be there. T-Wolves, I'm on my way. That's not worked out exactly. There's an inherent risk, and as there has been with Bargnani. I mean, Bargnani got a soft one rebound last night in a game in which Golden State didn't even shoot that well. It's beside the point. We're asking you what a bad loss is. I don't think a bad loss is last night. I don't think they're flat. You're going to see this team 45 or 50 nights this season have less talent than their opponents. And it really doesn't matter if you got a home advantage or not. It doesn't. I know home advantage plays well in the NBA, way more so than the NHL. It won't matter. The gap's too significant. Thomas, you're on the Fan 590.
How are you doing, Greg?
Great, thanks.
You know what? The question is, I mean, it's a no-brainer here. You cannot have there's no such thing as a bad loss to a team that really right now has no standards. I mean, coming into the season, there's been no expectation. There's no standards. What are they trying to achieve here? Some respectability? I mean, really, they have nothing great to achieve. There's no standards. So, therefore, a loss is a loss, whether it's by 20
yes.
or 30. It doesn't matter. This team has no standards right now.
But do you think they're trying to be bad?
Do I think they're trying to
be bad? Have they? No one's losing on purpose. Toronto's not coaching well, or the players aren't playing well on purpose. But they've been set up this year to go badly, to get a top five pick and to rebuild from there, haven't they?
Well, yeah, precisely. I mean, we talk about the Leafs a couple years ago when we said they should have tanked. What should they have done? Well, people were suggesting that Brian Burke should have went to the farm and emptied out the farm and brought them on. So indirectly, yeah, this is what it looks like the Raptors are doing, because Brian Colangelo knew coming into this season, when you put a roster full of backups on the floor, what are you going to get in a East against the Miami Heat or the Orlando Magic or Boston Celtics? What are you looking at the result being? To me, it's quite obvious. This team has no standard, and it was built that way from the start of the season.
Yeah, and again, you know, I think Raptors fans, and people are pointing it out to me on Twitter, are happier than Leaf fans had to be last year. How could you not be? There needs to be a prize at the end of the tunnel, okay? You're a leprechaun. You're a leprechaun. You don't follow the rainbow for nothing. You're not hoping there's a bowl of cereal there with, you know, that's 720 calories a bowl. I should know. It gives you heart palpitations. Can't remember when Lucky Charms started giving me heart palpitations. Like, if I had two bowls of Count Chocula now, you'd never see me again. I'd need an insulin shot. Ian, you're on the Fan 590.
Hey, Greg. How you doing?
Great.
Good. The Raptors this year, I think that they're doing a very good job competing.
Sure.
I've watched a fair bit of the games that they've played, and one thing that Toronto's got them doing is competing hard. And they played the Lakers, and they really took the Lakers to, I think they ended up losing that game by less than 5 points.
It was a great effort. And I thought last night was a good enough effort. I mean, they're outmatched talent-wise by almost every team they're going to play in the West and at least half the teams in the East. Like, that has to count for something. It's not effort why they're losing games right now.
Well, I would say that if you were to take a look at them 1 through 11 and compare them against other teams, I think on an overall basis, they're not so far off on a macro basis, on a total basis. I think that the NBA is really a star-driven league, and they just don't have that one star, one or two stars they can throw the ball to at the end of the game to win games. If you take a look at the last, I mean, they've played seven games this far, and they've been close at the end of pretty much every game. They just haven't had a guy they can throw the ball down into. to kind of win the game for them. I mean, you see Monte Ellis yesterday.
That's
the guy you throw the ball into. I mean, if you take a look at the Raptors compared to the Golden State Warriors on kind of a total basis, I'm not sure we're so far off. We played toe-to-toe with them for the entire
game. Well, I pointed this out. It's amazing. It's not their fault, Ian, but you look at where Curry is, and he's so much better than DeRozan. At the same age, and he was drafted two spots ahead of him, but that's not the Raptors' fault. They had the 9 pick. They probably would have taken Curry had he fallen there. But yeah, Ellis is sitting there, and it's not like he was a prodigy by any stretch. He was a late, if I recall, a very early second-round pick by Golden State like 5-6 years ago. And he and Curry look like a formidable backcourt. They scored 62 points last night. Al in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Hi, Greg. Yeah. Listen, I just was listening to the last call. I agree totally because I don't think we're that far away. There's a lot of parity in the league, but when you saw Curry last night and the other guy, Ellis, they're at a whole different level.
They are.
So we don't have guys who can go to that level. I mean, they won the game. I mean, we just couldn't handle them, right? I mean, they were just... You know, we don't have guys. Those guys just took over the game when it really mattered. And we don't, we have to get guys like that, which means we have to be really bad this year. That's just the only way. You know, we have to be really bad and see if we can get a guy with that kind of talent to build a team around. And that's why my other point is I think what they should do is the best thing for them to do is give Colangelo a long-term deal and let him do the job properly because right now he might be tempted to do things on a short term that could hurt the team. You know, so I think they should like make that decision fast, whether he's here or not.
I mean, I'm fine with that. If he's your guy, he's your guy. Make the commitment. It's literally do your thing or get off the pot. You got to do one or the other. I mean, I thought it was most disappointing to let. I mean, they're trying to pin this back on Bosch. What ended up transpiring. And some of that's accurate. I think Bosch was deceptive. I think Bosch was how do we put it? Manipulative. I think he was. Disingenuous with the franchise. But you know what? It's your job to seek that out. It's your job to spot that. You know, you look for character in draft picks, right? You do all these tests. Look, they do the Wunderlich test in the NFL. All sorts of ridiculous questions. Hey, if I draw a triangle, what's the first thing you think of to an NHL draft pick? Well, you should be able to spot it with an 8-year veteran or a 7-year veteran like Chris Bosch was. And Golden State, let me point this out. They haven't been that terrible. Okay, a playoff team that knocked off a one seed in 06-07. They won 48 games 2 years ago, hit the skids a little bit in the last 2 years, but that ended up helping them get Curry. Mick in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Yeah, hi, Greg.
Hi.
Let me suggest that this is the kind of season that separates out fans of the game from fans of a team or fans of championships. Mm. If the Toronto Raptors compete... And if they have likable players who don't look like they've lost the game before they start every night, then I think you can enjoy some good basketball games this year. We're going to see the Lakers. We're going to see all these lovely teams come in. As long as it's reasonably close and you like the guys putting in a good effort, then you'll watch some good basketball.
But less, you're right, and the diehards will feel that way, but less people, obviously less people are going to go, right? There's no star factor. They've seen visiting teams come in before with the players they've got. Miami will be something different this year. The Lakers are always different, but I don't know that people will come just to see San Antonio come in. You know what I mean?
Well, then maybe this isn't a mature basketball market. I mean, I don't think the Knicks don't have any trouble with their filling their stadium.
No, you're right. The Knicks, but like I said, they're an anomaly onto themselves. They keep going and going and going to Madison Square Garden. They have. It's been forever and a day since they've been good, and they keep going.
Same is true with the Leafs. I think there are a lot of real hockey fans in Toronto, and we suffered a lot of losing, but we got to watch Gilmore and Sundin and Caberle and Gary Roberts and a lot of really great players do some really wonderful things. And if you can't appreciate that, then you should just switch allegiances every year.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in the, if you hop off, you're not a real fan. If you boo, you're not a real fan. A fan's a fan. Everybody approaches it different ways. I mean, I'm the 8,422nd sports talk host to tell you that it's short for fanatic. Okay, and that would indicate passion. That would suggest lack of rationale when it comes to we cheer for sweaters. Seinfeld's got it right on the money. We cheer for sweaters. We cheer for ball caps. We cheer for all this stuff. Pat Henkin's coming up in a little bit. Want to take a couple more on this. 416-870-0590. *590. Didn't think they were flat. Didn't think it was a bad loss. Far from it in a lot of ways. You can't like the way the team's playing when they're 1-6. How do you like it? But at the same time, this is what we expected. We just didn't know how bad some of the other teams were going to end up being. I'm shocked Milwaukee's 2-5. I mean, I'd have to double back and see who they've played, but I'm shocked that they're sitting there at 2-5. The Pistons aren't shocking. The Sixers aren't shocking. The Nets, I think, are going to get better and better and better with Wall. But at the same time, teams like Washington are. That's what they are. They're bottom feeders. We're going to have to get used to it here. That's the team you've got. Now, if you're not a bottom feeder if there's five or six like you. Toronto could finish 10th in the conference and still win 27 games. That's how bad it is in the East. Bill in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Greg, how are you?
Good.
I think the Raptors are so embarrassing. I mean, I watched the Laker game, mm-hmm. and I've been watching Kobe play for over 10 years, and he always wants to humiliate his opponents. He didn't even turn it on against the Raptors. I remember hearing about the 1970s Canadians saying that if they played someone like the California Golden Seals, they could only turn it on for like 5 minutes, win the game, and basically coast the rest of the way. And that's the way the Lakers were. They don't even treat the Raptors like they're an NBA franchise.
Well, do you remember what James said at the end of the year? He basically said they didn't look like they wanted to win, as in they didn't look like they wanted to play us. So Cleveland got Chicago instead. And it was interesting because LeBron James basically called out Chris Bosh's competitiveness, and now he's teammates with him.
Exactly. And, I mean, this year, the Raptors, I mean, I guarantee the NCAA champion in March would beat them.
Not sure, but it would be an interesting contest. It wouldn't be quite Globetrotters Generals. But you know what? Nah, I'm not. No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second. Everyone gets like that. Oh, the best college football team could beat the best, the worst NFL team, right? Boise State could beat the Carolina Panthers. Yeah. It's time for the bonus show code. The Greg Brady Show bonus code. Yeah, that's what it is. Fan Club members, enter the bonus code DINOSAUR before 250 today at fan590.com. For 590 points, your chance to win a buffet dinner for four at Mandarin. A World Series champion, a Cy Young winner, Pat Henkin, the new bullpen coach for the Blue Jays, joins us next.
Take control. Join the Sport Authority panel and tell us what to do. Online at fan590.com. Now more of the Greg Brady Show on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590.
Very excited to talk to our next guest. He, of course, one of the more popular Toronto Blue Jays in the last 20 years and a Cy Young Award winner for this team, a three-time All-Star and obviously a World Series champion as well. He's the new bullpen coach for John Farrell. As his staff was announced yesterday, he is former Blue Jay great Pat Henkin. Pat, it's great to talk to you today. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I saw you enough. You're up here a couple times and in the broadcast booth. And honestly, I think you got a phenomenal future doing that. So I'm half disappointed because I loved seeing you on TV. But hopefully we'll see you on TV more doing interviews and whatnot. But obviously you pay attention to the game. You love the game and you've never stopped following it from your color analysis work.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was I did those two innings from those green there. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine in Toronto says, man, you know, you should do that, blah, blah, blah. He said, tell me the same thing. But, you know, I've never been approached as far as that goes, as talking to Buck Martinez and Pat Tabler and Rance Mullenix, Jerry Howarth, and all the guys that do the game. They do a great job. So, you know, I think that maybe down the road someday, you never know. I don't want to say never, mm-hmm. but, you know, being in uniform, I feel like I can bring a little more to the table in that regard.
Was coaching something you'd looked at for a couple of years? Were there other offers? Did you sort of throw your hat in the ring on this one? How did the genesis of it come about?
Well, I think that basically it started with a phone call from Alex. I did not throw my hat into any ring. Uh-huh. He called me, and I think that I was a little shocked at first, but after talking to my family. As you well know, in professional baseball, the big strain is on your family. Mm-hmm. And my wife was on board from the get-go, so I thought that that was the biggest part of it. And, you know, she's a great baseball wife. I'm lucky in that regard. So I think that, it was just a nice mix for me, a nice fit. Bruce Walton and I have been friends since 04. I played for Bruce in 04, and we stayed in touch all through the last, six, 7 years. And, you know, going to spring training as kind of a guest coach, going to instructional ball, I have a little bit of history with some of the players. Actually, I really know all the pitchers. Mm-hmm. So that part of it's going to be an easy transition.
game hasn't changed a ton as well since you last pitched. I mean, there's some pitching coaches, bullpen coaches, and it's not ageism, but they're older school. They remember four-man rotations. There weren't specialty relievers. There weren't as many, you know, middle relief guys. The save wasn't that big a stat. But being as modernized as you are, does that help you relate more to today's pitcher?
You know, I think so. I think the fact that, you know, I could sit in that bullpen and say, well, you know what? When I faced Jeter, we used to pound him down and in.
Exactly.
We threw the ball down and in. So I think that relationship with me and the player is going to be an easy transition. You know, maybe the player's like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, you faced Manny Ramirez. You faced Derek Jeter, A-Rod, and those types of players. So, you know, I think that part of it's going to be valuable. And again, my relationship with Bruce, I think, is probably the best part about the whole thing. I love Bruce. He's a great coach. He taught me stuff in 04. I think I taught him stuff in 04 as well. So I think it's going to be a really nice ham and egg thing.
Pat Henkin, our guest on the Fan 590. You were away from the Jays for 4 years, 1 year in St. Louis, three in Baltimore. And really from 93 on, like if someone had told you at the end of 93 when Carter hits the home run and you're all champions, that the Jays would not be back to the playoffs in 17 years. You wouldn't have believed it, but then again, you might have believed it watching sort of the evolution, how the money would work, the Yankees and Red Sox doing what they're doing, Tampa being smart with their picks. It's hard to believe it's been 17 years, probably from afar for you.
Yeah, it has. It is. It's tough to swallow a little bit, you know. I've been a Blue Jay since I was 17 years old, minus those four seasons. Mm-hmm. This organization has always welcomed me and brought me back in 05. Actually, asked me in 05, but I declined. But 06 and 07, 08, and 09, coming back in spring training and just being part of the organization, I've always been proud to say that I'm a Blue Jay. And you know, the day that I got traded, I'll never forget. I remember Gord Ashe calling me from the winter meetings, and I looked at my wife and I said, I think they just traded me. And she's like, no way. And I said, yeah, and I sure enough, Court called, and it was him. And I knew I didn't know anybody with that area code out there where the winter meetings were. And I was aware of the fact that they were, I think it was Arizona that year. But, you know, I remember, you know, being really bummed out about getting traded. Now, the plus about it was I got to go to St. Louis. I got to play for La Russa. I got to play in the National League. I got to see a lot of the National League parks. And, you know, and we were in first place from day one, so that was a refreshing thing for me. Like you said, ever since 93, it was kind of a long haul there. So I think it's a new era in Toronto Blue Jay baseball, and we're going to try to turn it around.
Pat Henkin, our guest on the Fan 590 and the Greg Brady Show. Beyond the obvious, and I guess what we think we know, what we know, all this stuff, what are your memories, I guess, person to person of playing with Roger Clemens when he arrived? I remember being at a sportsman's dinner, and people asked him about getting the first start of the gate, and you're the defending Cy Young champion. He said, hey, that starts Pat, so I'll take the second day. And I always thought that might have really started off a great relationship between you two. Was it? Was there ever tension? How do you recall playing with Roger?
Oh, no, there was never any tension. As a matter of fact, when Cito told me I was going to start opening day, the first thing I did was go up to Roger and ask him if he wanted opening day. I didn't know if he had some sort of a string going or what.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a respect thing in baseball. You kind of count your stripes. At that time, I think I had 5 or 6 years in the league, and he was looking at probably 10 or 11 years in the league. So more service time means more respect, and that's what I gave Roger. He went on, obviously, as you well know, to have two phenomenal seasons there. You know, people ask me all the time what would it like to play with them. I was actually his throwing partner for two straight seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a great teammate. You know, he wasn't in the locker or in the dugout a lot during the games. You know, I was the type of starting pitcher that I stayed in the dugout a lot during the game, probably 7 or 8 innings at least. I'd get up and maybe, you know, get a little stiff and walk around for an inning. But I always enjoyed being in the dugout. You really feel like you're part of the club. And, you know, rooting your teammates on was always a big part of my role in the 4 days when I wasn't pitching. So other than that, that's about the only negative thing I could say is that I thought Roger should have spent a little more time in the dugout. But, you know, every fifth day, boy, it sure was nice having him go out there and win ball games for us.
Pat Henkin, our guest. I'm a London, Ontario kid, but I grew up so close to Detroit, was always a Tiger fan. I felt like there were a couple years in 2000, 2001. I mean, I remember being on the radio there and we were banging on the Tigers to make you an offer. Were you ever close to being a Tiger? I feel like you were quoted as saying it'd be nice, but they were just in a weird place at that time and obviously not a very successful team at that time. You were looking for jobs.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was a free agent finally after my St. Louis year, which was 2000. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't get
Randy Smith, I think, was a GM at
yes.
the time. And the difference between what they offered me and what the Orioles offered me, it was night and day. You know, it was an absolute no-brainer. Sure, I would have loved to play for Detroit. I grew up there. But, you know, my heart's always been in Toronto since the day I signed in 1986. And you know, like I said, it would have been kind of neat to go there and play. But when you really start looking at the hours spent at home, you really don't gain a whole lot
mm-hmm.
because you got to go to the ballpark at noon or 1 o'clock. I live an hour from Comerica Park. So I'm looking at, you know, leaving at noon and getting home at midnight. You know, my kids are in bed when I get home and they're in school when I leave. So that part of it really wasn't that attractive. It basically came down to the Orioles making a lot better financial offer. So it was almost a no-brainer.
Yeah, and you obviously spent a brief period of time with Jack Morris. You must have headed down to Michigan and Trumbull an awful lot in the late 70s, early 80s, when the late Sparky Anderson first got there and saw Jack and Dan Petrie and Milt Wilcox pitch a lot, I would bet.
You know what? The cool thing about Jack was I got a chance to play with them. And when I look back on it, Jeff Ross, the equipment manager for the Blue Jays, my locker was right next to Jack's. I don't know if he did that on purpose or if it was just coincidental. But the bottom line was I was able to pick his brain. And the cool thing about the clubhouse was there's a sauna in the back by the shower at the old locker room. And every day after batting practice, Jack and myself would go in there for about 15 minutes or so. And, you know, just talking about shop, just talking mm-hmm. shop, talking mm-hmm. pitching, talking about how to get into that seventh and eighth inning and get more wins. And I think that the stuff that Jack brought to the table was that confidence. It just kind of oozed out on all of us as pitchers. And, you know, when I became a frontline pitcher for those few years in the mid-90s, I tried to do the same thing to the players around me. I tried to, you know, have that confidence in those work habits. So, you know, you pass the baton. I'm sure Roy Halladay did the same thing, and now Sean Markham's trying to do it here in Toronto. So it's just that's part of the evolution of the baseball and the roster change.
I was going to ask about the Jays staff before we go, and obviously it's a group, the starting staff, all under the age of 30. Kyle Drabek's going to push to make the team. So there's not a real veteran presence that went out the door when Halladay did leave, but that's got to be exciting as well. They're all gunning. They're all hungry. They'd all love to be a number one at any given time, and they all have the kind of stuff that's obviously got a lot of people excited about them.
No doubt. Matter of fact, I've always said you don't need a number one. You need five number twos.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you just consistently keep your team in the ballgame day in and day out. You get big hits in the eighth and ninth inning. Most likely it's because your pitching staff kept the scores, you know, low and close. If it's 8-0 by the fifth, the two-run bomb in the ninth means squat. So good starting pitching, I think it all starts there. You see it in the playoffs. You see it in the World Series, how pivotal it can be to have a number one type of guy that can just shut the other team down. And the depth becomes a factor during the regular season. So I love the rotation. I think it's exciting to be part of it. You know, Bruce has obviously done a great job. These guys have just jumped on his back. And you know, he's actually solidified a great respect there. So I know from slash coaching and spring training with the club that these guys all really care about him and they're really buying into his program. So it's exciting to be part of it, and I hope that I can instill the same things in the bullpen.
I want to ask one more thing. I'm fascinated to know the answer to this. I've asked a couple 93 Jays about this, but I remember exactly where I was when the Carter home run goes out. I know you do. When that inning started, I'm a big believer that's one of the great home runs in history. It's certainly underrated, but I'd also profess the theory that unlike, say, Gibson over Eckersley, Pat, that once I saw Mitch Williams, as little baseball as I know, and once I saw he was really struggling with the control, the crowds on him, you guys were going to win the game in that inning anyway. Did you have that feeling no matter what, even though he entered with a save situation, a run-up? Did you just look at his first few pitches and think, this game's ours, this series is ours?
Yeah, you know, he was effectively wild as a closer, as we all know. So when he came in the games, you know, we had such a potent offense at that time. We had a ton of confidence. We had just won the World Series the year before. We're running out first place from day one all the way to the end. We make a trade for Ricky Henderson, who brings more confidence, more offensive mm-hmm. punch to our lineup. So Ricky brought another level of confidence to our team. And, you know, his patience when he was hitting, and then his base stealing and all that stuff, what he brought. But I think the bottom line was, you know, when Joe hit that ball, those balls usually hook foul, and especially Joe, the way he always hooked the ball
yeah.
foul. I thought the ball was going foul. As soon as he hit it, I was charting by the water cooler. And, you know, lo and behold, it just stayed true right down the line and entered into that bullpen. So the rest is history. It was just a great, great experience for me and a great thing for the city.
Remarkable. He's the new bullpen coach for the Toronto Blue Jays in 2011, working with manager John Farrell, World Series champion and a Cy Young champion, and a lot of fun to talk to. Pat Henkin, thanks so much for this, and we'll see you obviously in Dunedin.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. All right, there's Pat Henkin. Superb guy. So articulate, so bright. Again, he just slid into that booth. I think it was a Friday night, and I think they were playing the Tigers. And I'm like, who's that voice that's working with Buck Martinez right now? This is Pat Henkin. And so good. So good on television. I still wish you'd take a television job. Why can't you be bullpen coach and call the games? What's wrong with that idea? I mean, it's not the stupidest question I've ever asked on the show. Hello, yesterday, does a horse know when he's won a race and when he hasn't? Think about that. Two broadcasting issues when we return. Only because, I think if we wait for CBCSports.ca to retract or apologize for the libelous Mark Seidel Taylor Hall story, we'll be waiting quite a while. Somebody not doing a great job updating that their website. But John Miller seems out on Sunday Night Baseball. Joe Morgan is out. John Miller seems out. Dan Shulman, favorite here, former Fan 590 show host, former fellow CHRW alum. I've not got to meet Dan yet. I'm excited to talk CHRW Radio Western with him. Or I'm not, because there's not much to be... No, it was a lot of fun, though we were never working together. I'm a bit older than Dan. No, that's not true. But anyway, he seems in, and Miller's out, and John Gruden, yay or nay? Do you want him to stay, or do you want him to take a head coaching job? I don't want to lose him off Monday Night Football. Not because I think Dennis Miller is coming back with his new political stances.